Hey everyone, it's the Lollygagging Podcast with Rick and Dave. And now here are your hosts, Rick and Dave.
Ni hao, Dave, ni hao.
Oh, Ohio gozaimasu, Rick. How are you?
I'm good.
What's you up to?
About 6 foot.
Oh, I didn't know they piled it that high. Oh my. Anyway, hey, welcome to the Lollygagging Podcast with Rick and Dave. I am Dave, and I am here with...
Rick.
Yeah, you had to think about that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to be one of those days. So some questions that were asked last time, but we didn't get a chance to answer them all. So I want to ask you and discuss with you answers for these questions. And the first two I will read off, and I think they kind of go together. I think they are two sides of the same coin. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts, and then I will share mine, which will basically just be agreeing with you. But the first question is, how can I improve my flow? Which I take to mean, how can I speak more fluidly and naturally?
Oh, okay, so this isn't a biology question.
No, exactly. It's not biology. That is for the Biology Lollygagging Podcast, soon to be released. So number one is, how can I improve my flow? And then number two is, how can I improve forming complete sentences? And I think those go together. So I will first say that my experience with these two topics is first to work on complete sentences, and then from there working on flow, which to me means linking the sentences together and creating a larger paragraph of conversation or dialogue and ideas. And so for me, with forming complete sentences, I generally just practice the hell out of sentence forms. And so I'll grab a phrase book or listen to some audio and pick out sentences that I find useful, you know, and then, and whenever I can, plug other vocabulary that I have into these sentences. So I might learn the expression, a nap before dinner would be great. Then I can kind of parse out something would be great, or I can parse out something before dinner. So instead of a nap before dinner, maybe a walk before dinner, or maybe watching TV before dinner, or I could say a nap before breakfast, a nap before taking another nap, and so on. And kind of getting sentence forms down, piecing things together, then sort of cutting and pasting, and just really having an arsenal of sentence forms that I can plug things into. And, you know, I know with some languages, you can't just immediately substitute words. Sometimes there are certain case endings. If you are working with German, the articles, like the words for the and change. So you can't always just drop things into place. But I find that generally that helps me practicing sentences out loud and sentence forms. And it really helps kind of give me that that foundation that I can eventually plug words into. And I think, you know, learning vocabulary might be a separate topic, but I find once you know the vocabulary, then you can kind of drop things in, and you know, you'll make mistakes, but you can at least put sentences together.
Right. Well, for me, I think this is actually part of a sort of a larger topic of active versus passive vocabulary, and also sort of to do with islands and memory and chunking and all sorts of things. But so if I just take the complete sentences one first and talk about, and it sort of leads on to the flow thing, is if you're a beginner, having an arsenal of sentences that you can sort of chop and change is really good. Once you've sort of reached intermediate stage, then you're going to run into the problem of you want to sound A, more natural, and B, quicker. So for a native speaker, you generally... there's loads of scientific research, and we can probably find some of it to link to, but a lot of it is about the brain doesn't really process each individual sound at a time. It does things in chunks, so it processes sentences at a time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, totally,
so,
yeah.
So that's a good one, actually. Do you know what I mean? You don't learn it as a word. You learn it as a chunk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't learn the individual syllables and words. You learn that as a set phrase.
Yeah. So it's a fully formed functional sentence that you use all the time. And typically, native speakers have lots of these already pre-constructed, you know. So it's like, you know, when you're building a house, a prefabricated house is really quick to put up, you know, because you're just outputting a lot of things. Now, there was a guy... Boris, I can't remember his surname, but he wrote a really good book about how to improve your language immediately. Oh. And one of the things was he discussed was creating islands. So this goes along toward the improving your flow. If you have an island, and what he means by an island is you have a paragraph or a topic which you know in and out, and you've memorized it effectively. You know, my name is Rick, and I live X amount of miles, and da-da-da-da-da, and I have three kids, and, you know, so you learn that little island about yourself. So you can talk about yourself for a goodly amount of time because you've basically learned this as a big chunk. You know, you once you start, you can rattle through the whole thing, and you sound very impressive because you've effectively memorized it with the correct pronunciation and all that sort of stuff. And it's an island. And you can also learn island topics about, I don't know, if you have a hobby, which is, I don't know, pick a hobby, Dave, quick.
Playing guitar.
Playing guitar. So let's say one of your topic skills is I play the guitar and my favorite guitar players are, right? Or, mm-hmm. You know, my three favorite guitar players are da-da-da-da-da, and then you have reasons for why you like those three individuals. But that's an island, and you basically memorize it so that it's when and if and the subject comes up, and then you always try and steer the subject that way, you can latch onto that island and off you go. And you create a lot of these little islands. And the idea is, the reason they call them islands is when you're drowning in the language because people are asking you questions and you know you're trying to respond, if you can steer the conversation to one of your little islands, it gives you a bit of a break because you don't really need to think about it because you know it off by heart, and you can do it, you know, off it goes. And it's a subject that you're well familiar with. So any questions they ask, you know, you can, you know, stay on your little island, as it were. But as far as the flow, that would help you flow. It just flows naturally straight out of you. But also the other thing is chunked sentences. So how are you? Comment allez-vous? If you basically have a huge number of set phrases, then, you know, it helps improve your flow. From forming complete sentences, because you've sort of pre-planned this, you've already got complete sentences, if you see what I mean. Otherwise, as you get, you know, more advanced, forming complete sentences is more a function of grammar study, just to make sure that you've, you know, included the correct words and the right tense and, you know, all that sort of good stuff. But again, practice makes perfect. With everything, especially language learning, practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the easier it'll become.
Definitely, definitely. I agree. And I also want to add that whenever I practice something, you know, putting sentences together or, you know, forming sentences, you know, the whole thing, I, even if I'm by myself, and especially when I'm by myself, which is all too often, I speak out loud. I talk to the cats. I talk to myself, and I really...
That's why you're alone.
Yeah, pretty much. So I definitely practice alone, and I speak out loud. And that really, I mean, people kind of forget that the mouth is a muscle that needs to be exercised, and you need to build strength there. And so don't just, you know, like think of, oh, here's a sentence I could form with these words. Actually say it, because it's a huge effort to say things out loud, and the more practice you get, the better you'll be at it. And for people who are looking to use languages for conversation, you got to converse.
Yep.
All right, excellent, Rick. I think that that satisfies my need for knowledge. Let's look at some other questions here. Let's go to the next one. How do I maximize using native media like TV and native, you know, books in the language, TV shows in the language, movies in the language, etc.?
Okay. Well, I think we sort of covered a part of this before with another question, but native media is very useful. And eventually, like if you use a course book, it's sort of like the crutches, or probably more relevant would be training wheels on your bicycle. You know, so eventually you got to get rid of the training wheels and actually ride the bicycle. So native media is the thing that's going to get you riding your bike, basically. It's they speak quicker if it's a movie or a film, because it's intended for native audiences, so they're not slowing down. Most course books are slow, and you know it's sort of baby steps. But once you get to sort of intermediate level, you need to start using native media. If you can start before, then it's even better. As far as forming complete sentences, which we talked about before, native media will help you do that as well, because if you're reading books, you're reading fully formed, well-structured native sentences. And so you'll get used to seeing, you know, well-written, well-structured, correctly spelled native sentences. And also, if you're watching television or films and things, then you're also getting that in the ear. You're getting, you know, correctly formed sentences straight into your eardrums, where you can process it and think about it and repeat it. Now, one of the things I would say is, for native media, especially films and television shows, you should try and get away from subtitles as soon as you can as well. Because again, those are just the training wheels that hold you back. Because I found that when I was doing French, for example, I spent more time reading French television than listening to it, if you see what I mean. Definitely. Because I had the subtitles on, and because I could read better than I could understand, you know, oral comprehension sort of thing, I had to turn off the subtitles and actually start to listen to what they were saying in order to work out the words and the meaning. So I think the sooner you can do away with subtitles when you're watching film and television, or transcripts when you're listening to, you know, podcasts and things like that, the better. I don't know what your impression.
My impression is,
I'm Rick and I study languages.
Do you like that impression? Was that good? No.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good one, actually.
Okay. There's your man there. Hey. I totally agree with you, but I have to say that if I were going to give advice, it would be do as Rick says, not as Dave does, because I find, and again, for those of you who don't remember, I tend to kind of, I'm like a language butterfly, and I go from language to language, picking up basic vocabulary and learning how the language works. And so because of that, I almost never get to a point where I am past subtitles. And what I mean by that is that generally, if I'm listening to something, I seldom have a strong enough vocabulary to understand what they're saying. And so to understand not only words that I've never heard before, but also words that are being spoken at a conversational speed, it's almost futile for me. So more often than not, I will watch a movie or TV show with subtitles. And I'm also more visual. I learn better through reading than from listening, but I will watch the subtitles and collect a lot of vocabulary from there. And then, should I have time and desire to go back, then I will watch it again, but with the audio instead, and forego the subtitles. But generally, I'm at a point where I need to build vocabulary before I can start listening and understanding. So I agree with you, but I'm also not at that level, so.
Well, one other thing, actually, I think we covered this before, is you should try and do four passes of media. Mm-hmm. So if you're watching a TV series, for example, get an episode, watch the episode first with no subtitles at all, native language or otherwise. The second time, watch it with your native language subtitles so that you understand everything and see how much of it you got right when you didn't have anything. When you had no subtitles. First time, watch it through with no subtitles. Second time, watch it through with native subtitles to see how much you actually managed to gather. And then finally, watch it with your native language subtitles and see how much you understood of it. Then on the fourth pass, watch it again with no subtitles whatsoever, because you should know it. Basically, watched it three times and you've had an explanation via the native language subtitles. So you should be able to catch nuances and things that you didn't the first time. Eventually, you will soon get to the point where you don't actually need to watch it with subtitles at all, and you will understand it, or the vast majority of it. The one thing about native media, though, is a lot of people who have perfectionist tendencies, which is not me, by the way, they have a problem because they don't understand 100% of the show, of what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. And so they're uncomfortable with ambiguity, is what I'm saying. And if you're learning languages, you need to gain a comfortability, you know, to be comfortable with ambiguity. You need to be able to be comfortable with the fact you only understand a certain portion of the audio or the, you know, that you're hearing and you're comprehending. So having a perfectionist attitude towards language learning is not good. You need to be comfortable with ambiguity. You need to be comfortable with the fact that, well, I only understood 70 or 80% of that, but I got the gist of it, so it's okay. It's not a major problem. And one other thing that you should always concentrate on is always try and look and understand the words you understand, not the words you don't understand, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
Because if you're going to comprehend what's happening in a television show, you need to focus on the words you do know, not the words you do not know. Because the words you do know will help you understand what's happening.
Okay.
And it'll also give you a clue to the words that you don't know, and you can probably figure out from context.
Fair enough. That reminds me of a Steve Vai quote, speaking of guitar. Steve Vai is this virtuoso guitarist who says he always focuses on his strengths, not on his weaknesses, which I found kind of interesting, because how do you build on, you know, how do you get over these weaknesses? But if you focus on your strengths, you will be stronger at what you do overall. And I think that will compensate for the weaknesses. And a true confession from me is that I am a perfectionist, and I often wait until it's the right time to study a language, which is not very beneficial. And I would, if I were going to read a book or watch a movie or listen to audio, I would want to go through and learn each word as I go. And I found that through the language, the super challenge that your forum, the Language Learners Forum, runs, I found that I started reading a book in German and the exact same book in Spanish. And rather than go through and parse out every word I didn't understand and make a flashcard for it, I just went through and I would go through one chapter in German. And, you know, I would think, okay, here's what I think happened. Well, I would read the exact same chapter in Spanish, and that would often reinforce what I thought I knew in German about the story. But it also filled in some of the blanks. So some patches that were kind of unclear in German, I understood what was going on because of the Spanish. I was able to understand enough of that. So I found it really fascinating to, first of all, kind of let go of that perfectionist tendency, but also to use two different sources, neither of which is my native tongue, to kind of fill me in on what the story was. So I found that fascinating, and I just wanted to share.
Did you go back and reread it in German, that same...
Oh, the same chapter? No, I only did one pass in German and one in Spanish. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I will be going back eventually to kind of pick out vocabulary that I need to learn. But right now, my plan was just to go through by force and just do it and get comfortable with reading things that I didn't have the entire vocabulary for. So,
can I just do one other thing about that I found useful for reading?
Yeah,
is really old school. So if you haven't, they used to make these things, which they called books, but they were made out of paper, like dead trees.
Oh,
my God. A lot of our listeners probably weren't aware about round back then.
Oh, it sounds so brutal. Dead trees. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
But anyway, if you get a paperback book, for example, in foreign language. So when I was reading French, I had a book in French. And what I would do is I would go through and... there would be a word I didn't know, so I'd underline it. I would try and guess it from the context. So I didn't look it up immediately. I went and thought, right, okay, well, this looks like it's probably an adjective. And I think it's probably a color, but I'm not 100% sure. But I'm going to make a guess, and I think it's green, right?
Okay.
So in the margin of the paper, I would write down my guess, what I thought it was. And I would carry on reading, and then I'd come to another word, and I'd say, okay, well, this looks like a noun or a verb or whatever. I think it probably means to jump, I guess. And I'd write down that. So I would write down my guesses as I went through. And then when I got about 10 pages in, your mileage may vary, you may want to do it more often. But then I would go back to those pages, and I would actually look up the word in the dictionary and to see how well I guessed from the context. And strangely enough, most of the time, I'd say probably 60% of the time, I was right. You know, it wasn't exact translation, but it was more or less correct. You know, I, you know, like it was a color, but it was the wrong color. Or yes, this is a verb, and it didn't mean to jump. It actually meant to jump up. So it was that sort of thing. But you can work out words from context, and I think you remember them more because you've looked at them once and you guessed, and then you looked at them, then you looked them up. So you've looked them up a second time. And then if you encounter them again a few pages later, then that's really useful. But as far as native media goes, when you're reading a book, that's quite useful. If you're reading an ebook, well, then it's easier just to click on the thing and it'll tell you the translation.
True.
But I found when I'm doing that, lots of times it doesn't stick because I haven't spent a bit of time with the word. you know, when I do a guess in context, you spend a bit of time with it because you're trying to work. You look at the sentence. What type of word is it? You know, noun, verb, adjective, adverb, preposition. You know, what is it? A pronoun? You try and work out what it is grammatically, and then you try and guess what it is from the surrounding words, what it is they're talking about. So you spend a bit of time with the word, mm-hmm. and then when you actually finally look it up, it's like, oh, yeah, okay. And so that, in my mind anyway, makes it stick a bit more than just looking it up every time I see it on the Kindle.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I find that words tend to stick more in my brain if there is a little more struggle with them, especially if I make a mistake, if I use the wrong word in a sentence and people laugh at me and point at me and kick me out of the spa, then it's internalized a lot more deeply. And I remember, okay, let's not use that word next time.
Yeah, or when you get arrested.
Yeah, well, you promised you wouldn't bring that up.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Also, another set phrase for my island of conversation. So,
yeah.
Okay.
I need my lawyer.
I plead the fifth. Okay, great. Well, actually, this kind of leads into question number four. How do I find books at my level?
Well, if they're your level, Dave, you need to look on the bottom shelf.
Oh, okay. Hey, there's nothing wrong with coloring books in other languages.
Yeah. Well, you learn colors anyway. Yeah, this one's a bit difficult, but I would say if I was browsing, well, again, in the old school days when you used to go to a library or a bookstore or somewhere where they had actual physical paperback dead tree books, what you could do is you could look inside the book and you could sort of estimate how many words you know. So if you took a quick look at a paragraph, you know, opened it up in the middle of the book, looked at a paragraph and worked out, do I know more than 60% of the words in this paragraph, then it's probably okay for you. It might be a struggle. If you know sort of 80 to 90%, then yeah, you should get that book because it's, you know, it's just slightly above your level, and so it's gonna help you learn new vocabulary and things, but not be so frustrating that you're looking up every word. You can also do this in some online shops. I think they let you do like a sample, so you can look at the first couple pages or whatever frequently of a book. So you would be able to do the same sort of thing. Just do a rule of thumb of X percentage. If you know less than 50% of the words, then it's probably not the book for you at that time, because you're just going to be looking up so many words that you won't actually understand what's happening, because by the time you've looked up all the words in a sentence, you forgot what it was, you know, what the sentence was about.
That's a good point. I agree. I find that sort of going through the, I mean, depending on your expenses and or, you know, your finances and your availability and access to books, I find that kind of going the natural route of your native progression, that is finding children's books and then maybe like chapter books and young teen literature. And I found that, you know, it may feel kind of childish and basic, but I find that it's really a great way of progressing, and you get a lot of, you know, easy vocabulary first, shorter sentences. Even reading, you know, and I know some people have mixed feelings about Harry Potter, but I find that even reading Harry Potter books is a great way to, you know, kind of link the very basics to maybe deeper subjects. I mean, there's great vocabulary, there's dialogue, there's a little weird stuff like Muggle and.
Well, I just to expand on that, I'm not a big Harry Potter fan because I've read it in English, Italian, and French, so I'm about sick of Harry Potter, to be honest. But it does raise the point, which is, if you're familiar with a book already, i.e. you've read the book in your native language already, then reading it in your target language, even if you're below the 50%, that's a book where it's like, if you only know 50% of the words, go ahead and get that book, mm-hmm. because you already know what the book's about, which means you'll already be able to guess the words from context. If you're getting an unfamiliar book, you can guess from context, but you don't know the end of the story. Like, you don't know how the story goes. Whereas if you've read it already in your native language, you already know the plot of the story. You know what happens to each character. You know when it happens and all that sort of stuff, which means that you can give a much better guess of the context of the sentences and the paragraphs that you're reading because you already know what's happening. So in that example, where you don't know as many words, mm-hmm. you could probably get that. You could probably read that book at a higher level. So if that book's a higher level, you could probably go ahead and get that because you're already familiar with the story, if you see what I mean.
Totally. I agree. So great. And now, I mean, there's so much online, and I know that you know the Language Learners Forum also runs a free and legal challenge. I think we've talked about that before. And so there are ways to access legitimate and legal items online. You know, and I think early on my goal was to, you know, get as many resources as possible, and I tended to hoard things, and then I found that I had way too much to keep track of, and most of it was kind of useless. But I do find that there are things online that I can access and you know, evaluate quickly, and you know, and like you said, like look at a page, see how much of it I understand, or also how much of it I understand that actually kind of grabs me. Because I used to hoard books about like Hungarian history and novels in, you know, in German and French, and I found that there were things that I wasn't interested in reading, and so the reading and the learning became kind of boring and tedious. So I would say if you are on a limited budget, look online for things and use Rick's technique of you know, doing a one-page scan and seeing where that leads you.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, the other advantage of reading books that you've already read is you know you like the book.
True.
Or not, because you've already read it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And if it's a series, even better. You know, like the Harry Potter thing, there's, what is it, 6 or 7 books to choose from there. So, you know, you have a series to read. It's often difficult to find a series that's translated well, and Harry Potter is one of the ones with the best translations. If you don't like Harry Potter, don't go for Harry Potter. Go for a book you like, because you're more likely to stick to it.
Right, well, then, and if you don't like Harry Potter, then you hate children, and your name is Rick Dierman.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah. Although, I do have to say, and this kind of goes back to the thing about native media, is that, yeah, you do have to pick something that you are willing to maybe read a second time, or a movie that you're willing to watch up to 4 times, which, you know, I have no problem with that, because I don't mind looking at movies over and over again, especially when I'm getting language learning out of it. But just find a resource that appeals to you, that you can understand the majority of a few pages, and something that may be familiar, or something that you know that you will stick with.
Yeah, if you don't like it, you're not going to stay with it, so don't even bother.
Exactly.
You know, if you have no interest whatsoever in sort of accounting, there is no point downloading the user manual for Microsoft Money, you know, to read, because it's just not going to happen. Or if you don't like Harry Potter, don't, you know, maybe leave the Harry Potter thing alone now.
Yeah, because you'll be demotivated and demoralized.
Yes.
Okay. Well, excellent. That I think I've gotten a lot out of that. And let's move on to our last question. And we are, we're getting close to time. So I'll give you 4 seconds to answer this. But Rick, how can I think in a language?
I don't know.
Me neither. Yeah. Actually, I think this kind of ties in nicely with especially the first 2 questions about improving flow and forming complete sentences. And I think really thinking in language
and native media, this ties in all of them together.
Yeah.
To be honest, because basically you do need to get to the point where you think in the language, mm-hmm. because if you're translating, then you're not going to be able to hold a conversation because there's too much of a lag between they say something, you translate it into your native language, construct your native language reply, translate your reply, say your reply. That just takes too long.
It does.
So you need to get to the point, if you're going to improve your flow and improve, make complete sentences and understand native media, which is coming at you at full speed, you need to stop translating. You need to get to the point where it comes in that language and it goes back out that language. So if you're learning German, you need to hear it in German. You need to respond in German. There can't be any of this translation crap going on in your head because it just takes too long. And people will switch. They'll start speaking to you in your native language because you take too long to respond. It becomes a problem.
Been there.
Yeah. Oh, one other little tip there, actually, for people is, I occasionally, you know, what's the thing I'm doing? What is that called?
Filler words? Stalling.
Stalling. Yeah. So basically, I'm using a filler word, and ah, and and like. Let me think. Phrases like that keep the conversation in. It keeps the ball in my court, basically. So if you say something like, "Oh, let me have a think about that," that's a filler. Mm-hmm. People will wait because you've told them you're having a think about it. So they need to wait until you've thought about it. So it gives you a chance to pause and construct, you know, your sentence. So that is one of the flow sentences that you probably need to learn. One of these filler sentences like, "Oh, that's a good question. Let me have a think about that." Mm. Or, "Oh, yeah, I need to think about that. Hang on."
You know, you raise an interesting point. I've never really thought about that before. That's the first time anyone's ever explained that to me that way. I will give that some thought right now and get back to you. See, I just used a bunch of them in a row. This is great.
Yeah, yeah. So if you can memorize a few of these filler words, then, you know, there you go. Like that.
Okay.
How can I say, to be clear, I'm not really sure, but I think I'm actually saying nothing.
you have
but a yeah. Anyway, look up filler phrases and filler sentences. So anyway, so that gives you a chance to if it's a complex question and you're having to translate it and then do your response, having something like that that can just flow out of your mouth without any thought required gives you a chance to construct your sentence and then carry on. But actually thinking in a language, you need to effectively overwhelm your brain, I think, so that you completely immerse. So if you just watched a whole load of television, 400 or 500 episodes of something, Star Trek is a really good one, by the way, because if you watched, I worked it out once, that if you watched every series of Star Trek and every episode of every series of Star Trek, that you would have something like 500 or 600 hours of native content.
That's most disturbing.
Yeah, so you'd get a lot of impact there. But the thing is, the reason I'm saying skip the subtitles, don't do the subtitles, just try and listen and understand, it more or less forces your brain to process this incoming language quickly. And your brain is a really good pattern matching tool, so it will start to automatically chunk up things that it hears all the time. It'll automatically start chunking up fully constructed phrases in your target language that you hear all the time. You know, how are you? What are you doing? What's up? Ça va? Oui?
Oui?
Etc.
Je ne sais pas. Oui?
Je ne comprends pas.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I lived in Germany, I found a book, and I think it was published by Oxford Press, but it had, you know, some vocabulary. Everything was sectioned, so it had vocabulary on, say, like, you know, driving or in a hotel. But it was more than a phrase book because it actually had sections that had kind of filler words and filler phrases and, like, you know, to be perfectly honest, and, you know, I never thought of it that way, or to put that another way. And it really had these linking phrases that really helped. And so I think that would be a great resource to have and to practice from. But again, it does involve a lot of repetition, practice, and patience.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the only way you're going to be able to think in a language is to practice thinking in a language. So when you're standing in the shower in the morning and you're thinking about your day and what you're going to do, try and actually think about it in your target language. Now, somebody told me, but I don't know how true this is because I didn't actually do it. I'm lazy. But he did say, if you force yourself to spend 2 to 3 weeks, every thought, drag it back and make it. So if I have a thought and it comes out in English and I want to be thinking in French, then I need to stop, repeat that in French. I need to say it again in my head in French and force myself to never think in English. One advantage of that is also it really, really, really highlights where your vocabulary is faulty, because you know, you can't reconstruct the thought because you don't actually know that word for fire hydrant or whatever.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to give in and look it up in a dictionary. And I think when you are struggling for a word and you want to know it and you just can't come up with it and you have to go to the dictionary, I think it goes back to what we were saying, where it will stick in your head more because you've had more of a struggle, more of a an effort to achieve that word. So I think that will that will stick.
Exactly. The more effort you made to think about it or look it up or guess it or circumvent around it, trying to describe it without actually knowing the word for it, It will help. It will help.
Okay. Well, I think that I think I can add no more to that. I think just a reminder that it does take time and you can't think overnight. But yeah, I think a lot of practice, repetition, and working the language into your daily life is critical. And I've just started restudying Esperanto and really trying to kind of get a base foundation. And so what I've been doing daily is, you know, I will look at my cats and say, I have two cats. Mi havas du katojn. And I'll say it out loud. And they're basic phrases, but the more I say them, the more they come out naturally. And that really helps me to work towards creating sentences, creating a flow, and eventually thinking in the language. And I think Esperanto is simpler based on my current abilities. So I think that should go well. But with other languages, it may take more time. And I'll be getting back into Slovak. And hey, I'm also working on Setswana. So that may take a little while, but I hope to be thinking in it real darn soon.
Fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Oui, ça va. Je ne sais pas.
I don't understand when you just randomly shout out French phrases.
Baguette! Pamplemousse! Anyway, yeah. All right. Well, I think we've gone way over time, Rick. So I'm going to say au revoir to you and a bientôt and que le boja. You have anything? Yeah, exactly. All right. So, we'll see you next week. And thank you for anyone and everyone who might be listening. And we will catch you soon.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
See you soon. Bye.
You've just subjected yourself to the Lollygagging Podcast with Rick Dearman and Dave Prine. If you enjoyed any or all or none of this podcast, please show some love. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave a comment. Share with a friend. Send us a nasty email. Download the podcast for later. Tell people you dated us in high school and regret breaking up with us. Don't sue us. And if nothing else, enjoy learning languages.
What is that?
Oh, I was touching myself.